Welcome to the Summer of Peace, a free global online summit designed to help you transform conflict in your heart, your relationships, and the world. The Summer of Peace is a production of the Shift Network at theshiftnetwork.com. I'm Rick Ulfick, the founder of We the World and the We campaign at we.net. That's we.net. I will be your guest host for this session. We're so glad that you're joining us and invite you to engage online at facebook.com/shiftnetwork. We are celebrating the 10th anniversary of 11 Days of Global Unity with a special closing 11 Days telesummit for the Summer of Peace. Launched by We the World and Global Partners in 2004, 11 Days of Global Unity begins on September 11th and culminates on September 21st, the UN International Day of Peace. 11 Days of Global Unity annually includes as many as 700 associated events, concerts, rallies, festivals, webcasts, and other activities in over 60 countries around the world. You can learn more about 11 Days of Global Unity by visiting we.net/11days. This is day 6 of the 11 Days of Global Unity Telesummit, and today we will be discussing the 6th of the 11 themes for change, children and youth. And our conversation will be archived in the Shift Network's World Peacebuilding Library for current and future generations. Today I am excited and inspired to talk about children and youth with Noah Miller, a young person who is working to foster understanding and connection between the youth of various ethnic and religious groups in Israel, and Nina Meyerhoff, who advocates for children and youth globally and works to inspire them to become youth leaders. Besides getting into some of the issues Noah and Nina are working on that affect young people around the world, we will also dig a little deeper into what drives them to accomplish the remarkable achievements that make each of them outstanding leaders in youth activism and advocacy. Welcome to the Summer of Peace and the 11 Days of Global Unity Telesummit, Noah Miller and Nina Meyerhoff. It's a pleasure to have you both on. And I just want to let listeners know that we are doing an international call today. Nina is in Italy and Noah is in Israel. So hopefully the sound quality will be okay. So let's start with Noah. Noah Miller holds a Master's of Science in Conflict Studies and is the Director of Development and Social Responsibility for the Israel Lacrosse Association. He is using the game of lacrosse as a vehicle to facilitate community development and peace building in Israel. Noah has taken his experiences in leadership development, conflict resolution, and collaborative learning to implement lacrosse programs that change perceptions, build bridges, and develop trust among the eclectic youth populations of Israel. Working closely with the Jewish, Ethiopian and Arab populations of the country, Noah is influencing the social fabric of Israel by using the game to create shared experiences and build relationships within these different ethnic groups. Noah also collaborates with other NGOs, community and school leaders, and parents to leverage their capabilities in achieving their shared goals. So Noah, could you please tell us, what is the Israel Lacrosse Association all about? How old were you when you started with it, and what's going on currently with your group?
I'd first like to give a shout out to Dr. Nina Meyerhoff, because without her and her influence in my life and experiences I had with Children of the Earth prior to my immigration to Israel, I really was inspired by what I experienced with Children of the Earth and really had a profound connection to the work. And it took me over here to Israel, where I really combined my passion for lacrosse with my passion for social change work and youth development. And what we do here at Israel Lacrosse is we use the sport of lacrosse combined with life skills programming to provide meaningful interaction between the youth that we work with. And like noted in my biography there, we work with kids of all sorts of eclectic backgrounds. We work with the Arab kids, the Ethiopian kids, Jewish kids from all sorts of different ethnic backgrounds. And what we really aim to do is use this sport to facilitate community development and to provide mentorship. And also, I'm an Israeli national team lacrosse player, so I play for the national team here. And we leverage our prestige and our influence as national team athletes to really set an example for the youth that this game is a special and unique experience. And it can really provide a meaningful outlet for interaction between kids that would normally not have the opportunity to learn about one another and forge these meaningful and very profound relationships. And you asked what's currently going on. We just returned back from the World Championships, where we finished seventh in the world. And now we're in the process of setting up new programs in other cities that continue to contribute to an environment of inclusivity and really fight apathy among the at-risk kids of these different peripheral communities.
Wow. That sounds very powerful and impactful. Thank you. So now let's bring in Nina. Nina Meyerhoff, EDD, is president and founder of Children of the Earth, an organization that inspires and unites young people and fosters spirituality in the form of conscious leadership. She has made a life of advocating for our world's youth. She co-authored Conscious Education, The Bridge to Freedom, and the handbook and training manual, Pioneering Spiritual Activism. Her work stresses the creation of an inner revolution for social evolution. In order to build a better, more peaceful world, we must begin with self-awareness, is what she says. She is recognized as an innovative educator committed to global responsibility through authentic learning. Her website is coeworld.org. That's coeworld.org. Welcome, Nina Meyerhoff.
I'm very happy to be here. Yes.
Yes, that's great. So, Nina, please tell us about Children of the Earth. What programs are you doing now with your group?
Well, first of all, I wanted to congratulate Noah. He's a living example of what the intention is. It's to inspire and empower young people to understand that they have an authentic impulse to make a difference in the world, and they can manifest change by taking time to actually do something. And Noah is a wonderful example of this. In terms of what is Children of the Earth doing right now, I would say we've got a number of focuses. One is called One Peaceful Africa, and it was inspired by the difficulties in Nigeria. And we have a young woman who is leading this named Princess, who is organizing youth groups to look about what is positive and how can you really fulfill a purpose and really change what's happening around you. And we've done it now in Ghana, Togo, Liberia, and Nigeria, and plan to do it throughout Africa and then unite them in a summit. Another project is, as you mentioned, we have the handbook. And the young people are taking that handbook with the manual, and they're constructing a strategy about how to go out into the world and work with other groups around this. We've touched 15,000, 20,000 young people, and the point is how to gather them together so that they feel connected and part of a youth movement that wants to bring change for a better world. And then this next project, which is very close to my heart, is going to Auschwitz in about a week. and we're meeting with Human Rights Director there, and potentially or possibly to build a youth center there that will focus on ethical leadership for the new humanity. And I'm using my terminology because I have no idea what we will call this. But the idea is to take a site which has had dismal experiences, and rather than looking at how do we heal it, let us bring in the young people who have the hope and really foster new thinking, the ability to make change, and bring them from all over the world together. So that's some of the things that we're doing right now.
Well, that sounds just great, Nina. On these calls, we like to dig a little deeper sometimes to see what life experiences shaped our special guests. Could you say a little bit about how you got interested in this work? What was it like for you growing up?
Who would you like to go first?
Yeah, Nina, you might as well keep going for a bit.
Okay. I think it was interesting that at 12 years old, I went to a school that was called School of Humanity, and I became inspired there because I understood for the first time in my life that we're one humanity and that we belong together and we need to understand each other and we need to begin to find a way to embrace each other. And from there, I continued my work and my walk, and at around 27 years old, I started a physical World Children's Center, plus I was director of education for 10 schools, and I kept going forward until eventually I really knew it's like peeling the onion to the truth, to the kernel of the essence of what's important, and I came to the understanding that we're all spiritual human beings having this wonderful human experience and that we need to embrace each other. And how do we do that? By understanding, accepting, and really following our passion and uniting as we and one.
That sounds great. So how about you, Noah? What made you so passionate about the issue of conflict resolution? Did your family discuss politics and social issues at the dinner table when you were growing up? What was it that kind of pushed you into the area that you are now? Were your school friends into doing this kind of thing as well?
I wouldn't so much say that it was something where, you know, discussing politics at the dinner table or things with my friends, but I think it really, my relationship to conflict resolution and social change work, I think is really kind of describes the dichotomy of my own identity. I grew up very passionate about martial arts and contact sports and things that are very physical and can seem very conflict-esque. I went through Hebrew school as a kid, and there was something, a phrase called tikkun olam in Hebrew, which means to repair a broken world. And it's something that I always identified with. And in fact, when I was a kid, my parents really pushed me to become involved in the community. My mother started paying me, a dollar a day to go as a really small kid and read to old folks in old folks' homes books. And, she started getting me hooked with that dollar a day, and then I started to do it for free and started to really feel that empowerment that Nina was discussing. And really, I felt a really deep need and a really big concept of social responsibility and personal responsibility to always be contributing to the community, always to be pushing myself to empower others and to really ignite that ripple effect where other people come alive and really experience what it's like to change the lives of others and in turn have their own lives changed. And I think, that's what really led me to Israel, was really combining my passion for this sport, lacrosse, that has been such a blessing in my life and really shaped a lot of my major life decisions. And it really gave me an opportunity to combine that with my desire to do good in the world and to do socially conscious work and really contribute to the building and repairing of this world that we have and to really empower others to feel like they really have the opportunity and the ability to change the world around them. So I think it was really a contribution of my parents' support and kind of pushing me to get into the community and then really supporting me and You know, thank God that they are okay with me being so far away and in living in a, you know, in an intractable conflict area. But it's really, like I said, I think it's having those experiences as a youth, and that's what drives me to do it, the work I do today, is really to give other kids an opportunity to experience what I felt as a young kid.
Oh, that sounds great. You're following your dream. And it sounds like your mother was a big influence there. That's terrific. So, Nina, I have a kind of a political question for you. Basically, about how political policies affect young people, and I'm thinking in the U.S. I've been really dismayed at the lack of investment in young people in the United States as a result of, I guess, the philosophy of some politicians who you could call deficit hawks in Washington, D.C. In the name of cutting government spending, we have less investment in education, so tuition costs have been going up, and student loan debt recently surpassed credit card debt at over $1 trillion, and there's been little investment in job creation that could help families and young people rise out of poverty. There's a statistic that really jumps out at me, and I think about it every day, that 1 in 5 children goes to sleep hungry each night here in the United States, in the richest country in the world. So do you have any comments about that? I know I'm on my soapbox here.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's heartbreaking to think about this and to realize that the United States of America no longer wants to take the torchbearer role, which was to have the finest educational system where so many opportunities would be available, where young people thought if they got a good education that they then could make a good life. And this will probably be the first generation that will have less in many, many ways than the generation that came before them. So it's a very disheartening piece, for sure. What can we do about it? I'm not sure. I do think that young people today are more interested, or let me say, are less interested in climbing that corporate ladder. I don't think they believe in that anymore. I think they want social innovation. They want to be their entrepreneurship. They want to be their own human being, to be free to be who they are and to create the life they want. And we have to start to build new structures that reflect that. Schools are really antiquated. Information is available everywhere. You don't have to teach it in the old industrial model anymore. You have to have environments that are conducive to the human being. And so we really need to rethink what we're doing and to support young people in this.
Thank you. Thank you, Nina. So I have a question for you, Noah. At We the World, we talk about what it would mean to have a cultural shift toward what we call we consciousness, the idea of prioritizing common interests and the common good and expanding our sense of what we mean when we say we. For some people, we means their immediate family and community, their ethnic or religious group, their social class, or maybe their country. For others, when they think of we, they mean all human beings, and some even include animals and plants, the whole web of life. At the launch of We the World's We campaign, one of our speakers, Jonathan Granoff, said, "I hope we expand so much that there is no longer any them." So part of what we're doing, I think, is aligned with your goals. What are your thoughts about making this cultural and political shift from I to we? How do you think platforms like 11 Days of Global Unity can help to make that shift? And how could this shift affect current and future generations?
You know, that's a good question, and I think that regarding my thoughts about the cultural and political shift from I to we, I think both as a pragmatist and spiritually and philosophically, it's a necessity. And I mean that in the sense that as a world, collective world society, we just face so many challenges that are really the people versus these challenges. And if we can't learn to collaborate and really face them together, you know, we're all, you know, it affects all of us in very profound ways. So I think as a pragmatist, looking through that lens, it's going to have to be a necessity in all these challenges like world hunger and poverty and the environment and all the challenges that we all face together on this world. Philosophically, you know, I think that it's also a necessity. I think that you're seeing just around the world and, you know, especially in my neck of the woods, in my neighborhood, that unless we shift to a we standpoint, there's going to be continued suffering, there's going to be continued digression, there's going to be a continuation of all of these things that we have worked so hard to eradicate as we, you know, move forward in history here. And I think that forms like 11 Days of Global Unity, I think it really comes down to advocacy and awareness that, you know, we see that people are working hard to create and ignite this change. Other people will feel inspired and there'll be sort of a ripple effect where people know that they're not alone in this kind of fighting the good fight. I love that, you know, that adage, fighting the good fight. And the greatest job you'll ever love, or the toughest job you'll ever love, because it is really challenging work and it is an uphill climb. But like I said, I think it's a necessity both philosophically and from a pragmatic lens. How could the shift affect current and future generations? I believe that really setting the example through, you know, our generations, and as we really work with the youth, you know, you change the youth, you change the future. And I think that's really the adage that guides our work here at Israel Lacrosse, is if we have the ability to help these youth feel empowered and create an environment of inclusivity and collaboration, there'll be a switch in their heads that shows that these invisible human resources, these connections are there and they're prevalent. And once we can really have that click, that shift, where we can really be aware of these connections, we can really overcome all of these challenges that we're going to face as a collective world population. So I think, like I said, just to wrap it up, philosophically and pragmatically, it's going to be a necessity to create this shift.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I like that expression you just said, change the youth, change the future. So I think that's great. I think that's what we're all talking about today on this theme of children and youth. So, Nina, you were an honorary co-chair of the launch of 11 Days of Global Unity in 2004, along with Jane Goodall, Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Barbara Marks Hubbard, and many others. For you, how does the platform of 11 Days of Global Unity connect for you to this idea of making the shift from I to we? And why do you think this is important for our world?
Well, first of all, I wanted to mention, because I forgot, is that we celebrate the International Day of Peace on September 21st by taking a busload of young people from Vermont down to the United Nations to attend the ceremonies there and to have workshops, and then come back and really explore what does this mean to you in your own life. And that represents from I to we. For me, personally, what I've seen is that we've grown up experiencing life as if we have to find our piece of the pie, that we have to cut that out and we have to protect ourselves and take care of the I. But that no longer works, because we are a global society now, and we are learning and experiencing how one piece impacts something else somewhere else, and that we have to learn that and consider that everything we do is interconnected and impacting. So thus, when we experience something, we're beginning to understand that it is reflected somewhere else, so we become a we versus an I. And the minute we start to become that we will begin to really live as a species, humanity, and have a new understanding that we have to care and share and live together if we want to survive on our planet.
Yeah, thank you, Nina. And also thank you for mentioning the International Day of Peace, because, of course, that's an integral part of the 11 Days of Global Unity, which ends on the International Day of Peace, September 21st. And it's in a sense, it's almost like the final countdown to the International Day of Peace. Noah, what have been your greatest challenges for yourself and the whole movement of coexistence in general? And I'm wondering, how does the Gaza conflict affect your ability to promote tolerance and understanding?
You know, Rick, it's definitely the political situation in the political world here, and it certainly influences the work that I do. In many different respects, and I think the biggest challenges that I face, you know, with the creation of these coexistence programs around the country of Jewish and Arab kids praying lacrosse together and being in these mentorships programs together is really, there's so many different things. It's really an uphill struggle in the sense that logistically it's a very different culture with very different meanings of time. There's so many holidays and things that influence scheduling. There's so many different variables that are always in play, and it really becomes an exercise on my end in quick problem solving and flexibility and ingenuity. And also really putting myself out there when I go into Arab neighborhoods as an Israeli national team player and coach, and really trying to break down any preconceived notions about you know, Americans coming here to Israel and working with the Arabs and really working against all of these cultural and political variables. However, I think that, like I said before, which Nina and a colleague of hers, Diane DeCare, who is also very involved in the peace building and social development realm, you know, they told me when I saw them recently that it's going to be that it must be, you know, the toughest job you'll ever love. And I couldn't really, I don't think, you know, a motto really resonates with me any deeper than that concept, because there are so many days when I come home and I'm just so emotionally drained from really living amongst all these variables. But really, I think that every change, every shift in the consciousness of a kid, every change that I see in behavior and perception of one another and the development of these strong communities of youth lacrosse players from different backgrounds, and how this sport has really become an equalizer to bridge these divided communities, the challenges just become opportunities. It becomes more opportunity for change, for growth, for development, more opportunity to really contribute to Kun Olam, to really repairing, you know, this world. And I think that every day has its unique set of challenges, but really it's to look to it through the lens of unique opportunities where we can kind of approach it differently. So I think living and working amongst all these interchanging variables is definitely depleting and exhausting, but I think it really provides the opportunity to really activate these kids and have them really see that their ability to influence their communities and to influence each other and to really be part of this change from the I to we is very much in their reach. And I think that you know, there are no challenges anymore. It's just more opportunity with more work, but higher reward.
Wow, that's very inspiring. I could imagine that it must be difficult when things are going on, you know, politically or on the world stage or right next door, that it could affect relationships of your team members, but. I mean, do you find that sometimes you have to kind of make a speech and get people like inspired to rise above, you know, what's happening on the world stage?
Well, I think, Rick, I'll paint a picture for you just to give you an image of what kind of, you know, kind of paradoxes I'm working with. You know, I'll have players that have highs or Star David necklaces, and then I'll have Arab players that have, you know, Take Back Palestine necklaces, and all of us playing together. And, you know, I'm a coach working in Arab communities with a Israel Lacoste shirt on, and, you know, an Israeli national team player working within these Arab communities. And I think that for the parents, for the staff, for the administration, I think when they see how the joy that this game brings to their kids and the way that these kids who do not have much of an opportunity to participate in sports and the way that you can see on their face that they're empowered, regardless if it's Hebrew or English or Arabic, you can't deny the way that lacrosse lights these kids' lives up, the way that it is something within them that really combats these feelings of apathy and really creates this inclusive environment where lacrosse is really this binding concept. So I think, you know, we talked about that notion of the ripple effect. I think when parents and the school and the staff and the community leaders really see the profound impact this new sport and this new shared experience has on all of these eclectic youth populations, that it really becomes very evident, and it doesn't require much of an inspirational talk because it's very visible and very profound. So that's, you know, that's really, I think it's the kids that empower and inspire the adults, and it's what really makes me get up every morning and go back on the grind to really make this happen, which is certainly a huge challenge. And like anything in life, you know, it's like anything worth doing, it's highly challenging and highly rewarding. And if it was easy, it would have been done already.
I love that ripple effect that you're talking about. I think that's really inspiring. So, Nina, same question for you. What have been your greatest challenges, and what lessons have you learned?
Well, first of all, the greatest honor or pleasing experience I can have is hearing someone like Noah, who we've worked with and known over the years, come through in the ripple effect and become his own person and take such leadership and go so deep within himself to really serve others. I mean, to me, that's the greatest reward I could get from the work I've done. For me, the challenges were I came into this work in my 20s, and at that time I think people thought I was crazy because, you know, there wasn't anything like this to say that you really wanted to spend your whole life working towards this understanding that there was a better world that could be created instead of just staying within the system and looking for success. I stepped out and I started to build new structures and models that I believed would be better serving to humanity. And at that time, it took a lot of courage, and of course, being young, I was unsure of myself. But, you know, once you get in touch with that passion and that understanding, it's like what Noah's speaking about. You just, the more you put energy into it, the more you understand that this is the only way you can do life, that it's very important, and to live with purpose is the greatest reward in life there is. Then success has a whole new value. The value is knowing that you have meaning, and that as you walk in on this earth and you do this work, that you are fulfilling something deep within yourself. And our life is very short, and if we can leave it a little bit better than when we came into it, what a wonderful thought that is. And so it's very, very rewarding to let go of the structures that were expected of oneself and to become who one is and to serve others. That is the greatest reward of all. And in terms of what I've learned, I've become who I am. That's what I've learned. You know, it's like I've gone to the deepest recesses of my being, and I've learned to trust and have faith and hope and really build models that I believe will help humanity.
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you. So now let's take a question from our audience. Someone named Marriott Sheldon in North Carolina has a question and a comment and a question. And she says, as an advocate for Earth rights and youth activism, I feel it's important to inspire youth to be aware of our fragile ecosystems and interdependence with all living things. I appreciate Nina's campaign to help young people care for the Earth. And one way to reach youth, I believe, is through education about how industrial agricultural practices and pesticide use are affecting bees and other pollinators and our food supply. Beeing is a new campaign calling for action to save the bees and inspire a new way of being in harmony with nature. Marriott mentions a bee in festival and rally in New York City on Saturday, September 20th, Bowling Green Park, and the People's Climate March on September 21st. So Marriott's question to both of you, she says, what will it take for young people to be aware and care enough to get into the streets and take action? Do you want to weigh in on that, Nina, and then maybe Noah?
Okay. I think first, you know, education. Education, the definition of that means to draw out. It doesn't mean to download into. Educare comes from the Latin. And so we have to give our young people the opportunity to really experience that they're valuable and they know themselves. And once they understand who they are, they can start to observe the world. And as they observe the world, they'll begin to want to change, and they will take action on that change, and they will unite with others, their peers, their mirror to each other what needs to be done. Young people are ready. We have to give them that platform. We have to give them support. We need to be able to stand with them and also understand that in terms of evolution, they are already the next level of consciousness. All that we need to do is tell them not to imitate what has come before.
Right, kind of get out of the way, right? For adults.
You bet.
I hear you. And Noah, any thoughts about this too, about young people, you know, taking action?
Yeah, absolutely, Rick. And, you know, I'm going to use a quote to kind of contribute, I think, my thoughts on it, because I think I love quotes, and I think that our thoughts and words becomes our actions, and our actions, you know, become these habits, and our habits become our character, and then eventually our character becomes our destiny. And I think that there's a quote, I think, that really resonates with me about this question about what to take for young people to really take action. And the quote goes, the meaning of life is to find your gift, and the purpose of life is to give it away. And I think that it's really creating the environment for a firsthand experience where someone's really able to find what it is that gives them life, what it is that gives them passion, what it is that really activates them, and then being able to share it with other people. And I think that that is really a firsthand experience, and it could be, like Nina said, educational experience, athletic experience, all sorts of a range of human emotions and experiences. Whatever it is, I think that helps ignite that passion within us to really want to be part of the change, really to be an actor in creating this world that we all desire. I think that all people really have an innate desire to, you know, we're not social isolates, we're interconnected, we live within these different social systems. I think it's really creating the environment and the opportunity for kids to experience it firsthand. And, you know, I think that's really that concept of what does it do, what does it take for kids to really take action and to feel empowered that they can really do something profound and really impact one another, I think is really giving them, creating all the environment for them to have this experience. And then I think the rest is organic as they really come to realize what their gift is, what gives them meaning, and then in fact, how can they share it with others. So I think, like Nina said, education, creating the environment for these rich, meaningful, deep experiences, and also creating the guidance to help them move forward, which is what Children of the Earth has really been to me when I was younger and continues to be. So I think that's a really profound question, and I think what does it take for kids to take action is going to be a question that will be continued to be asked, and I don't think it's so much about the answer, but I think it's really about the questions. You know, what questions do we ask that moves us forward individually and collectively? So I love that question.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. You know, and both of you are talking about education so much. I want to get on my soapbox again a little bit about education. I used to be a math teacher in the New York City public school system. So I wonder, what do you think about a shift that I'd like to see in the goals of elementary school education? I guess not just in the U.S., but in general, but especially in the U.S. Graduating students who are self-motivated to learn could be the primary goal of elementary school education, rather than attaining specific levels of proficiency in reading or math, which is what the focus is here, you know, with standardized testing and high-stakes testing and all of that. So I'm wondering if being self-motivated to learn were the goal, do you think that it would transform education as well as society? What do you think about that? Maybe Nina, why don't you start?
I'm sort of laughing. Self-motivated. I believe young people, children, especially in elementary school, are potentially self-motivated. What we do is take that away from them by our expectations, and they have to start to compare themselves. And we call it self-esteem. Do you feel good about yourself in comparison to somebody else? Rather than, how can I support you in what you're doing so that you could learn more and do it better and become who you are? So, yes, I think a really good teacher, fine teacher, and I want to say it again, I was director of 10 schools, plus teacher, et cetera, so I really have knowledge of how all of this works, that there's, of course, information you want to make available and you want to give strategies and support to young people, children, and how to learn, but on the other hand, the individual, the human being, is what comes first, and then you build it around them. You don't just have this curriculum that you download on top of them. But that takes a lot of work, and it should be experiential. You know, we need to have that integration of really experiencing something. That is learning more than mind input.
Right.
I could go on and on. That's a soapbox, but, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
No. Well, for me, I would love to see an explicit policy change, because right now it's all about the test instead of, you know, the things you were just talking about. But anyway, Noah, do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, when she talked about experiential learning, I think that's something that I really agree with. I went to University of Vermont, which is, you know, home of John Dewey, who is a big practitioner and advocate for experiential and group-based learning and emotional intelligence development. And I think that, you know, we have this theme that we've been talking about a lot today about interconnectedness, and how do you activate the youth to realize the interdependence of all living things and how we live in these systems and how we're not social isolates. Everything that we do impacts one another, and we have the ability to positively or negatively impact one another. I think really creating that experiential learning where kids learn civility, they learn how to work within a group, they learn how to to be. They learn how to treat one another. They really learn what it is that, motivates them, what it is that inspires them, and, how they exist within these groups and how they can work together to solve these issues. It's not a, you know, shift in the paradigm, like what Nina said about, you know, shifting from this downloading of information to kids to really creating the environment and the experience where kids are empowered in these experiences. They learn a lot about themselves and about one another and about how they exist in these social systems. So I think that real emphasis on experiential and group-based learning is really, that's what will really create the shift of bringing this notion of interconnectedness to the surface and really, like the past question, bringing kids out into the streets and really taking action and really, you know, finding that meaning, finding that purpose, and really giving it away and becoming part of that global ripple effect.
Yeah, thank you. So we're getting close to finishing up, but one question I was wondering is, you know, this 11 Days Telesummit is part of the Summer of Peace. And given all the stresses and frustrations that we all deal with and both of you deal with on a daily basis, how do you find peace within yourself? How do you cultivate peace with other people, especially if challenges come up with people you're working with or people who disagree with your ideas and approach? Nina, why don't you go first?
The first thing I would think of is that we're really living in a world that seems to be being crackerjacked up. I mean, there's so many little fires, big fires, volcanic eruptions going on. It's just incredible. So how to see that all and keep inner peace and then inner peace with others. I guess what I do for myself is mainly breathe deep and understand that when I'm having an experience with someone else in a relationship and it's difficult, I'm very sure not to blame them, but rather to look within myself to determine what is it that struck a chord in me that I need to reexamine and how can I phrase things so that they're more acceptable. Because I always want to make sure that there's no intent of harm in anything I do. Harmlessness is so important. To speak one's truth, but to speak it with a loving intention and to allow the other person to speak their truth, to really hear each other is so important. And I think in these times, I mean, watching what's going on all around me, stillness, observation and understanding that with the breakdown, something new is emerging and that we need each other to help each other go forward in a better way.
Oh, thank you. And Noah, any thoughts about that? How do you cultivate peace in yourself and with others?
You know, I think especially of my life in Israel and being an immigrant here and really feeling, experiencing firsthand what it's like to immigrate to a country as a citizen, I think that humor is something for me that helps me find peace within myself. You know, like when I talked about my daily days here, it would be, everything would be, I think, unbelievably frustrating and unbearable if I didn't have a good sense of humor and was able to laugh at myself so much. So I think that for me internally has really helped me kind of steady myself, is really being able to laugh at the frustrations and really relish in the rewards. And I think, as far as finding peace with others, I think it may be part of my personality or part of my, just my general demeanor is, really trying to see, I think, the humor in every situation and like my dad, you know, my father's also a very big quote person, and I think that's why all of these adages and mottos really resonate with me. He told me, you either win or you learn. So I'm either always winning here or I'm always learning. And I think that kind of motto, that kind of, those words that really shape our behaviors and guide our characters and in turn manifest in our destinies is really these personal mottos. And when it comes to peace for myself and those around me, it's that humor and those mottos that really, I think, keep me balanced and really have a profound impact on the work that I do and what I try to impart on others. So like I said, if you can't laugh at yourself, what can you do? So I'll tell you what, Rick, I'm laughing a lot over here and just trying to fighting the good fight.
I wanted to add, if you don't mind, that we all meditate and make prayer. That's so important because the energy we send out is the energy that will surround us.
That's great. Thank you. So as we wind up, could you let people know how they could get in touch with you and maybe support your work? Do you have a website and any last things you'd like to say? Let's start with Noah.
Yeah, if you'd like to check out the work that we do, both as a natural lacrosse team and in our nonprofit, you can check out lacrosse.co.il. We also have an Israel Lacrosse Facebook where you can follow all the work that we do. And if you really feel compelled to, you can email me at noah@lacrosse.co.il. You know, I'm always willing to talk to people. I'm always excited to share our story and always excited to have others experience what it is I experience every day. So, you know, the listeners out there, feel free to check us out and to, you know, support our work and to join the movement is really the motto that we have. Come join this movement here in Israel, using the sport to bridge divided communities and provide meaningful interaction and development for the youth here of the country.
Thank you. It sounds like a great model that maybe could be replicated in other parts of the world as well. Nina, any contact information you'd like to give out to people to get involved with your work?
Yeah, please look at our website, www.coeworld.org, and you can write me at nina@coeworld.org, and I'm happy to answer your questions or requests and gladly to tell you and inform you on how you can be involved in the future.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Noah Miller and Nina Meyerhoff. Our discussion really fit We the World's goals of inspire, inform, and involve. We say those are three I's that make a we. So I want to thank all of you for listening. This has been a terrific conversation with Noah Miller of the Israel Lacrosse Association and Nina Meyerhoff of Children of the Earth. Be sure to join us for the next session and hopefully all of the 11 Days of Global Unity Summer of Peace sessions. And if you missed any, you can listen to and download the recordings. We encourage you to get inspired, informed, and involved online at facebook.com/shiftnetwork and with We the World at we.net. Thank you again for joining us. Bye-bye.